This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, December 8th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. It's an opportunity to begin to put at least some of the onus of regulating back onto Congress. And no, it's not Congress that's doing it. Will Yateman is a research fellow in the Cato Institute's Robert A. Levy Center for Constitutional Studies. He details the new case before the U.S. Supreme Court that may establish that there are some powers that Congress can't easily delegate away.
Congress has a job to do. They pass laws, they conduct oversight, they are supposed to keep a tight grip on the executive branch, at least when you read the structure of the Constitution. If Congress wanted to give the president a WeWork space and sell the White House, they could do that. But the administrative agencies of the executive branch have grown so large and unwieldy, and largely it's Congress's fault, right?
Indeed. And the problem here would be Congress's set it and forget it approach to domestic policymaking. And by this, I mean, rather than take on difficult decisions itself, Congress over the last 100 years has, in essence, granted these broad delegations, is what they're known as, of authority, of law-making authority to an alphabet soup worth of regulatory agencies. And again, the impetus here has always been passing the buck, avoiding responsibility for big decisions, requiring regulatory agencies to take them on. And then when they disagree with the agency, the lawmaker can say, aha, I mean, you know, we've got, you know, this is regulatory power run amok. And when they agree with the agency, they can crow about it to their constituents.
Right. So in the particular example of the EPA, the statute doesn't go that much further than the agency shall make the air clean.
Indeed. And so that's the initial problem, is these capacious delegations. So we're setting aside the pass bucking or the buck passing impetus for these things. What they've done, really, it's engendered two big practical problems. And the first is that these delegations of authority are so broad that agencies can get creative through interpretation, through statutory interpretation, and thereby endow themselves with regulatory power that Congress had expressly denied. And there's all sorts of examples to this end. I'll name one, and that's net neutrality. You know, I won't discuss what the policy entails. I will note that it's a big deal, and it's a policy that Congress repeatedly has considered and refused to enact legislation to this end, notwithstanding the fact that Congress refused to do it during the Obama administration, during his second term. President Obama issued this executive order asking the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, to please adopt a rule requiring net neutrality. And the agency did so. So we've got this weird dynamic, and it's all too common, whereby a regulatory agency, often at the behest of the president, achieves major legislation that Congress had just demurred on.
And it's interesting. It's interesting in particular when Congress considers and then chooses not to legislate. It's not like it's a matter where Congress has been silent.
Exactly. And to be sure, we're not supposed to, we as lawyers, don't read too much into congressional silence. However, the political point is pretty darn loud and clear, and that is, if our lawmakers deliberate on something for years and don't do it, then it doesn't make much sense that a regulatory agency acting upon an 80-year-old grant of authority can achieve the same result.
So let's talk about West Virginia v. EPA. What are the questions that led up to this, and what is the question in this case?
Well, it's an example of what we just spoke of, or really this phenomenon of Congress considering something, not doing it, and then agencies doing it. So specifically, in the 111th Congress, this is in 2011, a cap and trade, a nationwide cap and trade program to mitigate climate change, passed the House of Representatives and ultimately foundered in the Senate. Well, a couple years later, during Obama's second term, the EPA issued this Clean Power Plan, which ultimately would have entailed an EPA-administered nationwide cap and trade of the sort that Congress had just declined. So what was the basis for this major policy? It was this obscure provision of the Clean Air Act. This is Section 111. And this had been used a handful of times in the previous 45 years to regulate, for example, fertilizer plants or paper mills. So this obscure provision that indeed is ambiguous was effectively leveraged by the EPA into this powerhouse of statutory authority. And again, that's very much in line with the problem with these capacious delegations that we were talking about before. So this rule comes out. Of course, Obama's successor, President Trump, has entirely different values. His administration immediately repeals the rule and replaces it with something far less onerous. And in doing so, the Trump administration reasoned that, hey, the Clean Air Act, this rarely used obscure provision, clearly does not give the agency the authority to regulate the electricity grid in one fell swoop. As always with these things, the Trump rule was challenged, and the D.C. Circuit ultimately rejected the Trump administration's reasoning. And the D.C. Circuit, it's very much condoned what I had set forth earlier is a problem, this of these capacious delegations that give too much leeway to these agencies. For the D.C. Circuit, that was a solution. I mean, the court, in effect, said, hey, we've got an ambiguous provision. We've got a major problem, climate change. Given these factors, we construe the statute as requiring the EPA to go large. Red states, conservative states, if you will, and industry subsequently sought Supreme Court review of the D.C. Circuit's decision, and recently the Supreme Court agreed to do so.
All right. So we have a Supreme Court that has reined in a couple of different kinds of deference, Chevron deference and our deference. Chevron deference, of course, is how administrative agencies interpret statutes for the purposes of creating regulations. Our deference is court judicial deference to agencies when they interpret their own rules. And the Supreme Court has sort of hemmed that in, boxed it in a way. But this seems to be a much more core question.
Indeed. So what you're getting at is that there's many ways to skin the cat of reining in the administrative state when it comes to these judicial doctrines. And the Supreme Court is advancing or considering many of these doctrines. We're getting to one of the most important, and this is this nascent so-called major questions doctrine. And the court has hinted at this in a number of prior cases, but it's never really been front and center. And the reasoning here is to basically take on directly these capacious delegations that we were speaking of earlier. The rule of this major questions doctrine is that Congress cannot delegate, cannot grant major policymaking authority to regulatory agencies unless it's clear, unless the Congress is express. This major questions doctrine was, in fact, the lead argument of the states and industry and nonprofits that challenged the D.C. Circuit Court's ruling. And I'll say this, the D.C. Circuit's its thinking here could be construed as the anti-major questions doctrine. I mean, in essence, the lower court, the D.C. Circuit Court was here was saying, because the statute is ambiguous, because we've got a big problem, the ambiguity confers power, even more power. So we've really got a conflict, if you will, between what the D.C. Circuit was thinking and what the Supreme Court has hinted at. And by taking this case, this conflict's going to come to a head.
Now, when courts defer to Congress, which they do regularly on matters that they say these are political questions, but when it comes to interpreting what Congress's job is versus an executive branch agency, that seems like a question that is should be squarely before the court.
Oh, to be sure. I mean, so I can't imagine arguing otherwise. And you hint at the stakes here. So I'll note in the immediate term, the Biden administration's regulatory authority under the Clean Air Act to mitigate climate change is very much front and center. But in the longer term, you're getting at the broader consequences. And that is agencies in the future, were the court to reverse the D.C. Circuit on the grounds of this major questions doctrine, then in the future, regulatory agencies perhaps will be reluctant to invest the resources necessary to bang out one of these major rules when the basis is, ambiguous and rarely used statutory provisions. And on the other hand, and this is getting directly to your questions, it will compel Congress in the future to be more specific, which is something, I think we should all be able to agree upon. When I was setting forth earlier the big problem with these capacious delegations, I omitted mention of perhaps the biggest problem, and that's that these statutory provisions are so imprecise, are so broad, that Republican and Democrat presidents can come to diametrically opposite policies based on the same ambiguous statutory language in succession. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing, as we go from Obama to Trump to Biden, this wholesale flip-flopping of policies major and minor across the board with the administrative state. And this is, the essence of regulatory uncertainty. I mean, this is no way to run a country. So to the extent that the Supreme Court gives teeth to this major questions doctrine, it could be a powerful mechanism to moderate these harmful policy swings that occur every 4 to 8 years when the White House changes party hands.
So with respect to rulemaking in the future, there's this old line, a husband and wife are talking to somebody and she says to it's a therapist or somebody and says, well, I let him handle all the big decisions and I handle all the small decisions. And thankfully, we've never had to make a big decision. And it seems to me that agencies might seek to define their future rulemaking as not major questions. These are not big questions. And that seems to, the trying to get the jello. The jello goes where it's going to go. It seems like that may be a possible side effect if the court says, no, you're a regulatory agency, you can't be deciding these major questions.
Very much so. I mean, again, that was on the one hand, it gives Congress an incentive to be more precise. But on the other hand, it's going to give agencies in the future, were the Supreme Court to come out this way, pause before it tries to impose nationwide major policy that Congress had just rejected on the basis, on the flimsy basis of these rarely used, obscure, ambiguous statutory provisions.
For Congress, this arguably makes their job harder. It imposes a kind of accountability, if you will, onto members of Congress for actually sitting down and dealing with major policy questions that largely have been delegated away.
Yes. I mean, and that is the way the system is supposed to work. I mean, it does not comport with the spirit of the Constitution for Congress to pass the buck to these what really are constitutional abominations. I mean, these administrative agencies house the executive, legislative, and judicial functions under one roof. I mean, that's antithetical to our notion of checks and balances and whatnot.
When do we expect the court to hear this and perhaps rule on it?
A briefing will be is due through December. There should be oral arguments soon thereafter, and I would expect a decision in the spring and summer of 2022.
Will Yateman is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast pretty much anywhere, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.